The House Transportation and Regional Governance Policy Committee will come to order. Good afternoon. We do have a quorum present, so I'm going to take up the minutes. Representative Whalen. Now, we first have a slight change on the very last sentence on the second page. We need to make an amendment that simply says the motion prevailed, referring to House File 204. So we'll add those three words, the motion prevailed. So Representative Whalen, would you make a motion to move the minutes?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Representative Whalen moves approval of the minutes as amended from the February 13th meeting. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. The minutes of February 13th are approved. We also have members a little bit of housekeeping here regarding House File 455 from last the 13th. And so we're going to move to reconsider and then move to re-refer to GovOps Committee. It had been sent to General Register. That was the course it took last year. But this year the committee chair wants to see it in government operations. So I will move to reconsider the referral of House File 455 to the General Register for the purpose of re-referring it to Committee on Government Operations and Elections. Is there any discussion? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Okay, the bill is now before committee, and I move that House File 455 as amended be re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations and Elections. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Okay, the motion prevails. Okay. So now we will move on to our agenda. And we have Representative Torkelson has a couple of transportation bills. So welcome to the committee, Representative Torkelson. And as you're being seated, I will move House File 861, and that be re-referred to the Committee on Transportation Finance. So,
thank you,
welcome,
Madam
Representative.
Chair. Pleasure to join you this afternoon. These are department bills. We have two of them up today.
Okay.
I am not going to attempt to explain them myself. I have an able-bodied person here who will do that on my behalf and on behalf of the department.
Okay. And Representative, I will just amend my statement. This will be going to the Committee on Government Operations and Elections.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe that is correct.
Okay. Very good. Good afternoon, Mr. Radin.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Tell us about the bill, please.
Yes, I'm Eric Radin with MnDOT Government Affairs. Section 1 of the bill removes a sunset on target group business and veteran-owned business participation. Those businesses receive a 6% bid preference on projects that are 100% state funded. There's a separate program for projects that receive federal funds. But we would like to remove that 8-year sunset so that these small businesses can continue to be eligible for that bid preference. Section 2, I probably won't spend a lot of time on. I believe there's an amendment to delete that section of the bill. Section 3 updates our state statute to allow the movement of milk on interstates. Milk haulers have been able to obtain a special overweight permit, but under state and federal law, those vehicles were prohibited from operating on the interstate system. And Congress recently allowed them to operate on the interstates, and so now we are proposing to conform our state law to that change. Section 4 provides that certain speeding violations, which we sometimes refer to as Dimmler violations, cannot be masked for people who have a commercial driver's learner's permit. The state law already prohibits masking of violations for people with a CDL, but we're asking to be in conformance with federal requirements, and so that people with a learner's permit do not have those violations masked either. Sections 5 and 6 of the bill change the cycle for updating two state plans from a 4-year cycle to a 5-year cycle. And these plans used to be on a 6-year cycle, and the legislature felt that was a little too long, and so we changed it to 4 years, and we're finding that 4 years might be a little too quickly because it doesn't give us time to update or to work on implementing the plans before we have to start updating the next cycle of plans. Section 7 eliminates a need to do commissioner's orders for yield signs at rail crossings, and it also requires the installation of yield signs at any crossing when a stop sign or some other form of traffic control is not present. And this is a change that has been made in the federal manual on uniform traffic control devices, and so we're proposing to update the statute to match that change. And Section 8 exempts pipeline welding trucks from most federal motor carrier safety regulations. And this was a change that Congress made in the FAST Act, and states are required to adopt comparable provisions within a three-year period. So that's a brief overview of the bill. I'd be happy to try to answer any questions.
Madam Chair, perhaps we should take up the amendment to get the bill in the shape that I would like it to be in. We have an A1.
Let's see. We do have, right. Very good. Okay. All right. I'll move that A1 amendment then to get it in the shape that you'd like it in, Representative. So is there any, could you just cover again what that is, Mr. Radin?
Certainly, Madam Chair. There is a provision in the bill that would have given explicit authority to state employees who are not state troopers to perform vehicle inspections, and this was a result of a recent lawsuit on the matter. But there's been some resistance, I think, to that proposal, and so rather than put the rest of the bill in jeopardy, we've agreed to delete that section of the bill.
Any questions? Okay, seeing none, then all in favor of the A1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay, opposed, same sign. Amendment is adopted. Okay, then on the bill, is there anyone with some question or comment that they wish to make? Any members? Anyone in the audience wishing to speak to the bill? Okay, all right. Then I will renew my motion that House File 861, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Government, Operations, and Elections. I did. Those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Okay. The motion does prevail. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have another bill with my name on it.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I'll go ahead and move House File 859 for you. And again, I believe you have an amendment. And that will be re-referred to the Committee on Transportation Finance.
So. Very good. Similar circumstances to the last bill. Again, my able-bodied bureaucrat will explain the bill.
Our friendly bureaucrat. All right, Mr. Radin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sections 1 and 6 of the bill relate to a trunk highway turnback of Highway 112. This would transfer jurisdiction over to Lesueur County. The roadway is about 15 miles long, and since all trunk highways are listed in statute, the legislature must take an action to repeal the description of the trunk highway before we can turn it over to local government. And ensuring that the roads are on the right system, either the state or local system, leads to better efficiency and maintenance for the construction and operations of these roads. And you should have a copy of a board resolution from Lesueur County, as well as Becker County, for another section of the bill stating their support for these turnbacks. Section 2 of the bill authorizes the sale of property to adjacent property owners if the original landowner chooses not to purchase property when the department determines that we no longer need the property for a trunk highway purpose. Sections 3 and 4 of the bill we are hoping will help us to dispose of property that, again, we no longer need for a trunk highway purpose. So we would go through the steps listed in statute, where first we offer the property to local governments, and then if there's no public purpose, we have to go back to the original landowner and give them an opportunity to purchase back the property. And then we go to a public bid, but there are occasions where we don't receive any bids. And so this would allow us to list the property on a website with a minimum bid price, and then anyone could find it on the website and choose to purchase it. Section 5 allows MnDOT to convey some property in northern Minnesota to the Minnesota Historical Society. This contains the McKinstry Mounds Indian Burial Site, and we believe it's more appropriate that the Historical Society have possession of this land, and the Historical Society is here to answer any questions, but they're supportive of this transfer. Section 7 turns jurisdiction of Trunk Highway 225 to Becker County. Again, you have a copy of the County Board resolution in support of that turn back. This highway is approximately 9 miles long. And Section 8 is a technical cleanup of the state statute, deleting Legislative Route 101 from statute. This is not Highway 101 in the West Metro, but it's on a portion of Interstate 35 in Southern Dakota County and Northern Rice County. It's also designated as Legislative Route 390, so the designation as Route 101 is redundant. And there was a turn back in the 1990s when this change should have been made in the statute, but for whatever reason that was not done, and so we've discovered this duplication in the statute, and we'd like to repeal the redundancy so there's no confusion.
Okay, very good. And again, I see you have an amendment then, Representative Torkelson, so I will move the A1 amendment to put the bill in the shape that you wish it to be. Maybe you want to just make a quick comment
sure.
To that.
Madam Chair, after the reviser drafted the bill, one of our attorneys in the Land Management Office read the reviser's draft and thought it was a little bit unclear as to who was receiving the offer. And so if we just go back to the original language, we feel it's more clear about who's making the offer and who's receiving the offer.
Okay, very good. Right. Any discussion? Seeing none then, all in favor of the A1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Okay, the A1 amendment is adopted. Okay, I guess then we're, if there's no other discussion, would there be anyone from the audience that wishes to speak? Okay. All right, we'll move to the bill, and we renew the motion for 859 to be passed and re-referred to the Committee on Transportation Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The bill is adopted and moves on to Transportation Finance.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Okay, and we're going to change the agenda just a bit because we're waiting for the author of the next bill. But in his stead, I wonder, Representative Bernardi, do you want to come with your bill? So Representative Bernardi has House File 94. Oh, here he is. Okay. So welcome, Representative Bernardi. Would you like to move your bill?
Yes, I'd like to. Oh, no, I don't have my file with me. Sorry, I wasn't quite ready for being up here.
Sorry about that.
I got that.
And I believe your bill is going to be referred to the General Register.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move House File 94 for moving it to the General Register.
Very good. So please, when you're ready, please present your bill. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. Thank you for hearing this bill in our committee. I appreciate that. This is something that did get put on to an amendment on another bill last year, but it didn't. That bill didn't move through the whole body through being passed into law. So with that, I would like to introduce my speakers, and then I will give you a briefing on the bill. But with us today is the mayor of New Brighton. Her name is Mayor Val Johnson. Thank you for coming today. And then also we have the finance director from New Brighton, Brenda Davitt. So thank you for coming. The city of New Brighton has been appointed by DVS as a limited driver's license agent. They wish to become a full-service driver's license agent to be able to sell, to do driver license renewals. The most common reason any of us go to the local DVS license center. They applied in 2015 and again in 2016. And what they found out is that there is part of the law that we need to change, and that's because there is a restriction regarding people, if you have other DMVs, and I want to make sure DVS license centers around you within 10 miles, you can't get a full-service one. Well, last year when we did this bill, they reached out to all of them that were around them, the city of New Brighton, and they got letters from everyone supporting their ability to get a driver's license through the, not a driver's license, but a DVS license center through DPS. That's how it was. And the only one that didn't give them one was Sears, and I don't know if they were for or against, they just didn't submit a letter. We have Roseville close by, and these agencies are very interested in having New Brighton be a part of it because it will help enhance convenience and produce less wait time in their own offices, and it will strengthen the reputation of all DVS centers. So Real ID is going to be coming up, and we're going to even have more people coming into these centers getting their renewals done. Well, hopefully we'll be having a real ID be coming forward in the state of Minnesota. And because the commissioner of DPS cannot go beyond the laws written, it was suggested to New Brighton to come to the legislature for a variance. Hence this bill, DPS has told New Brighton that they're neutral on the bill, and I think we have some, if they want to testify, they can too. But the important part is that we bring this to our community, so when people come in, they expect to be able to get their picture taken, and that has to be done at a local office, as I understand, and maybe somebody can clarify if we have new technology on that. But this is an important service for our community. And so with that, I would like to also mention we have an amendment, and it's supposed to be coming down here, a verbal amendment, and it's just adding the subdivision that this refers to rather than the whole section of the bill. And I'm getting copies of that. I just didn't have it quite ready for you. I was wondering if Matt Burris would be able to narrow down in that subdivision. We just would say, I believe, subdivision, and I can't recall if it's two or not, that we would just add subdivision, whatever the number is, into this language.
Mr. Burris, do you want to do that now, or do you want to propose something later?
Madam Chair, I can discuss it at your convenience.
Let's do that then.
Okay, Madam Chair and members, the proposed oral amendment would be on page 1, line 8, after 171.061, insert, comma, subdivision 2. So again, that's page 1, line 8, after 171.061, insert, comma, subdivision 2. And the effect of that amendment would be to more narrowly specify what provision is being overridden in the governing statute for driver's license agents. That's one of the provisions, along with a couple of administrative rules that are overridden in the bill in order to establish a full-service driver's license agent.
Okay. Any questions about that?
Madam Chair, could I move that amendment?
Representative Bernardi, certainly.
Okay. Great. I'd like to move that amendment.
All right. All in favor of the Bernardi amendment? Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign? Amendment prevails.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
You guys can do that.
So who would like to go first?
I suppose the mayor.
Okay, very good. Welcome to you.
Thank you very
much. Please give us your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Valerie Johnson. I happen to be the mayor of New Brighton. I want to thank all of you, and thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing us to have a voice here today. The proposed amendment here, or the proposed legislation, allows New Brighton to be a full-service full-service license bureau. And right now what we do provide are things such as the plates and tabs that go on cars. And people come into our office all the time looking to renew their driver's license or to get a driver's license that you're carrying around in your wallets. And they become very frustrated with us over the fact that they're not able to do this. So the City of New Brighton and the New Brighton Council has taken the initiative to put in our budget the funds that are needed to add this service to the current services that we're offering. So we are prepared to set forth, literally tens of thousands of dollars to buy the cameras, remodel the city hall so that we can handle this, and provide this service not only to the citizens of New Brighton, but the surrounding communities. And this is a service that every single person in the state of Minnesota needs in terms of whether it's a driver's license or an ID or, driving a car. And so to have a service that is limited to a 10-mile reach is rather inconvenient for a number of our citizens, and also it's something that we can easily provide to them and are ready to stand forward and do so. Thank you.
Very good. And Ms. Davitt, are you interested in addressing it?
Yep, thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Brenda Davitt. I am the Director of Finance for the City of New Brighton, and the management of the License Bureau does fall under my responsibilities. I just wanted to add just a couple things onto what Mayor Johnson did say. I just wanted to let you know that allowing the city to become a driver's license agent will also allow our residents of New Brighton the choice and convenience of coming to the city to support our efforts and also helping us to lower our property taxes. It creates better customer satisfaction, not just with the customers coming to our office, but all license bureau offices, because they're having a positive experience. They don't have to come and be referred to another offices. We could basically help shorten lines and wait times throughout our little metro area. So with that, I urge you to help us support in our request.
Thank you. And Representative Barr, question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure who could answer this question, but I was just wondering, when they look at the location, in that 10-mile radius of differentiation, do they take into account anything like density of population or convenience of the location? Because I'm a convenience gal, so, I can appreciate some of your remarks. So I don't know who could answer that.
That would be directed to
So someone from the DVS office?
Yeah, she's here.
Okay, very good. Welcome, Ms. Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dawn Olson, and I'm the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services at the Department of Public Safety. According to our administrative rules, we do take into account population. We also take into account geographical areas. So the metro offices are handled a little differently than urban offices would be. So that all goes as part of the equation.
Mm-hmm. Any follow-up, Ms. Representative Barr?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Olson, can you tell me, when have you looked at the New Brighton facility and done any assessing on that facility?
Mm-hmm. Ms. Olson.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, yes, we have. The predominant factor is the distance. We are prohibited by rule that offices can be no closer than 10 miles from an existing office. And so in our discovery and looking at this office, the New Brighton office is within 10 miles of the offices that they've spoken about. And so we've been prohibited from moving forward with this.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much. And Representative Mason.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I can understand the frustration of not being able to renew the licenses. But I just want to clarify. So you checked with all the ones that were within that 10-mile radius, and they're okay with it?
Okay. Well, except for one? Yeah, I'll clarify that a little bit more.
Senator Bernardi.
Maybe Ms. Davitt here could do it as well. But last year they received letters. They were trying to work with DPS to be able to have them approve it or give a waiver or however you do it. And we did get letters from all of them. I don't know. There's about 10. And one of them was, the only one they didn't get from was Sears. That's right by the Capitol here, that facility. And I don't really think of that as my community per se. I think it's kind of a far away. But so that's what we got as of last year. The request wasn't. Do you want to add anything to that?
Ms. Davitt, did you want to make some additions?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. We did. We received letter supports, and it includes Anoka County, Hennepin County. It was White Bear Lake, City of Maplewood, City of Roseville. All of those are within our 10-mile radius, as well as the Sears office. And all of them but the Sears office did give me a letter of support for a variance through the state of Minnesota going through DPS.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions? Some information?
No, that's okay.
Okay. Is there anyone from the audience that wishes to comment on the bill? Okay, very good. Seeing no further discussion, then we'll proceed to the vote. So I'll renew my motion that House File 94 be referred to the General Register. Oh, yes, we did have an amendment. All right, so House File 94, as amended, be referred to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion does prevail.
Thank you, committee members. Deb. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Okay, and next up we have Representative Swiedzinski in House File 124. Welcome, Representative.
Hi.
And I will go ahead and move House File 124, and this will be going on to be referred to the Committee on Agriculture Policy. And, Representative, I see you do have the DE amendment.
The DE1, Madam Chair.
DE1. Okay. Do we have them in our packets? There we go. Okay. Okay. So we'll move that DE1 amendment then to get the bill in the shape that you prefer.
Yes.
And all those in favor, let's just go ahead and adopt that. So all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The DE1 is adopted. And Representative, why don't you then go ahead and present your bill?
Certainly.
I know we have a number of testifiers,
yep.
So we're eager to hear about it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. I appreciate the opportunity to come before you and discuss this bill that has probably garnered a fair amount of attention, especially for rural parts of the state, and strictly dealing with kind of MnDOT's change in policy and when it comes to permitting and beginning the enforcement of times when it comes to ditch mowing along the truck highway system. There's been a long practice throughout the state of Minnesota where adjoining landowners have worked extremely diligently in the management of those ditches on behalf of the state and on behalf of their own operations. Many feel, and I believe that this bill represents and turns back a bit of the onerous requests by the department to kind of keep the current management system that's been in place for the last 85-90 years continuing, that promotes agriculture, that promotes the opportunities and the economic viability that those adjoining lands offer to rural Minnesotans. And with that, just kind of going the DE1 amendment, I'll just kind of walk you through the amendment and kind of we can talk about it as we go along if you like. And so some of the major major changes, it probably begins on 1.15, and that talks about right-of-way and talking a little bit about the road authority and their responsibility. But then 1.20 really gets after the fact that most of the dates and the ways pertain mostly to the road authority and not the adjoining landowners or the farmer that would be potentially mowing and working in the ditch area. Line 1.22 prohibits the commissioner from requiring any individual to obtain a permit in order to mow the truck highway rights-of-way or establishing limitations or requirements that govern truck highway rights-of-way for mowing or haying. 2.1, on the back side, the landowner or occupant of the land is adjacent to the truck highway. That kind of just kind of lays out who is who along the highway system. 2.3 really allows the folks that are adjoining landowners that maybe are not interested in having their adjoining land ditched or mowed. This gives them the opportunity to simply opt out of the system to have it done in different management, whatever that might be. 2.5 is to notify the commissioner whether, in writing by phone, to do that, whether it can or cannot occur upon those particular areas. And 2.9 allows certain restrictions to still apply through the commissioner, and that would be within the rights of way, the freeway, within the project limits of construction, so that it would allow them to limit access of those particular ditches during a construction project. I think we could all make that argument that, you know, if there's a major construction project going on, that there should be some limitations. And then in line 2.11, it talks about really weed management. And we heard a lot for the dangers that the potential spray that could cause to animal livestock, but also other crops. And this would just simply, very simply, as you have your lawns sprayed here in town, when that company comes by and does some application to your lawn, they simply put a flag in oftentimes to just remind you that there was some action taken, and that same action could be done along the highway system, so they adopt some of those same rules there on behalf of MnDOT. And you know, I can attest very assuredly this is a very important issue when it comes to rural Minnesota. My phone has been ringing off the hook, and I'm sure other members as well. We have a number of folks in the audience that are directly affected by this, and I think they'd probably like to say a few words, and I appreciate your opportunity to come before you.
So, Representative, then, do you want to call your testifiers forward?
Certainly. You know, if folks have Paul Lanoux, if you would like to come forward, you could come and introduce yourself. I'm not sure if anyone else is planning on speaking. Come on up.
Okay.
So, Pat Burley, here you go.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you so much.
Please give us your name for the record.
Yeah, my name is Paul Lanoux from Marshall, Minnesota. Occupation of farmer. So,
very good. Yeah, you can proceed.
Thank you. Members of the committee and Madam Chair, first time being here, so excited and a little bit nervous because my regular job is to farm. And so I have five kids at home, and we farm beef cattle out in the Marshall area. When we look at long-term, the farm, we're currently living on my in-laws' farm, and they've been working with people for many, many years in mowing ditches and establishing the relationships with the landowners. We've been mowing the ditches in cooperation with the landowners. This is our source of hay. This is our source of feed. This is our source of food for our animals. When I look at that, we've got Mark, who's in the audience. Hey, Mark. He's a smaller farmer in our area. And Mark, he only mows his ditches along, or his only hay sources from those ditches. And so when we look at it, for him to get a permit, jump through those hoops, potentially get the liability insurance and all those other components that are potentially associated with it would deter him from getting his hay source and his feed for his animals. And so that's where I have a major concern on that one. Another area that I look at, too, is I have five kids. Safety is the number one priority for me, and I know that that's an area that we need to be very concerned about working along a public road. We do our best along the side. We have the flashing, you know, we have globes on ours. And I don't want to hurt anybody that's along the roadway, and I don't want them to get hurt as well, but we're very safe and diligent. If there's an inch of water in the bottom of the ditch, I'm not going to drive my tractor across it. Because let's be honest, I don't want to get stuck in the middle of the ditch. And it's one that we've been mowing, like I said, for years oftentimes. And I don't want to potentially damage my relationship with that landowner that we work with and to cause harm to their ditches. Another area that I've heard some concerns about is with pollinator habitat. Well, let me tell you what we're doing on our farm. On our farm, we're doing 30 acres of pollinators that we're going to be planting voluntarily. We're also planting roughly 40 acres of alfalfa. More habitat. Our neighbors oftentimes are doing the same. Not quite the extent as we are, but we're finding some of that marginal habitat. We're doing our job as farmers currently without regulation, without rules, in order to better the pollinator habitat as well. So don't take my food for my animals, because I like the cows, and I want my kids to be able to have those as well. And so I'll turn it over, I guess, if there's any questions. I don't know how this...
I don't see any at this point, so we'll proceed with your next testifier, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I am
Please
Pat
give Burley. Us your name. Yes, okay.
Pat Burley. I grew up along Highway 59. I own land along that road right now. Have been maintaining quite a few miles of road ditches. Oh, my gosh, probably since before I was born my family did it. I think we do a very good job of that. We, when you purchase land along Highway 59, I verified this with my county assessor yesterday, our acreage, we are built to up to the center of that road. I feel in a way that we're losing some of our rights there, and that in my experience, we have been doing a good job of maintaining that road ditch, of cutting the grass, Mr. Lanou mentioned the safety factor. We often cut that, I would say, the end of June, the 1st of July, and at that point, that is when the grass has the most nutritional value. It also has a safety feature in that that ditch is now free of provision as far as for cars. I mean, you're not going to have a deer or an animal dart out near as fast. You're going to be able to see it sooner. So my concern with this is I think most of the people that cut the road ditches are doing a very good job of controlling the weeds, maintaining the ditches, saving the DOT some expense. And as a landowner, I guess my concern is why has this come about when the old system was working very well? We are also planting pollinators, alfalfa. I think we're doing a very good job of improving our environment and maintaining it.
Great. Thank you. Do you have additional testifiers then? Oh, here we are. Yes. And why don't you introduce yourself for the
record?
Thank
you, Madam Chair. My name is Chris Wallum. I am a farmer in Southwest Minnesota, and I represent the Minnesota State Cattlemen's Association. And we are here to support Representative Slavinsky's bill. The other gentlemen have testified and covered everything. I don't need to spend your time going over the same things. Thank you.
Okay. And here we have, we have a question then. Representative Mason?
If all the testifiers are done.
Okay. Okay. I think we have a few more, so why don't we just...
I see another testifier.
Right.
Well, okay. I'll do my question after the testifiers.
Okay. Okay, Mr. Papp.
Mr. Peterson.
Ms. Peterson. Okay, Mr.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union, and we also support our House File 124 as amended. Appreciate the work Representative Swazinski has been doing on this. You've heard all the different reasons. The farmers just did a great job of explaining this. We've worked on this issue for several years, and I just wanted to touch on the process real quick. Representative McNamara had a bill on this 2 years ago, and we worked on it with different agencies. It kind of stalled out. Then last year, we had another bill, same bill, and we started working on it, but the DNR picked it up, and we were working with the DNR on that bill, And at the end of the last session, we kind of just decided not to go forward, but we talked about continuing to work on the issue. I think the DNR at that time, too, they were hiring a new coordinator for the Roadsides for Habitat, which is a program that they've had for a long time. So we agreed, you know, to work on that, try to do some promotion within our membership on this issue. And then around 1st of November or so, our ag groups, we met with the DNR. And one of our questions to the DNR at that time was, are we doing anything with road ditch mowing this session? And the answer was no. And so we kind of went along our way. We had our annual meeting 3 weeks later, which is at the same time as Farm Bureau. And this is a top issue for us. The next week, we found out that NNDOT just went ahead and did this new permit. I understand, and Farmers Union understands, that there's been a permit system in place for many years. However, it is not followed very universally. Probably every farmer that calls me about this issue, I ask them, have you ever had to get a permit? 9 out of 10 have never had to get a permit that I've talked to. And so this law has been on the books, but as you've heard from the farmers before, it's just not universally enforced. And so I appreciate that process, you know, and how it's been working. And I think that's important. So we were willing to, you know, continue to work on it. We are continuing to work on it. We appreciate that MnDOT has rolled back the permit requirements some, but we still feel like the permit is going to be a burden to a lot of farmers. So for many reasons that you've already heard, we urge you to support this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Mr. Rapp, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Kevin Papp. I'm president of the Minnesota Farm Bureau. I'm a corn and soybean farmer in Blue Earth County, Minnesota. You know, it's already been said, but it's worth repeating, from a Farm Bureau and a farmer perspective, certainly our number one priority is safety. That's safety on the road, safety on our road ditches, quite frankly, safety on our farm fields and as well as our farm sites. So road safety is very important. Another issue that we want to make sure is brought up, and that is the control of noxious weeds. Certainly that is a concern. We've heard a lot here lately, the last year or two, about Palmer amaranth and the concern with that, and want to make sure that noxious weeds can be controlled. You know, if you're a farmer or a rancher, really your connection to all Minnesotans is food and the food that we raise. And certainly from a food perspective, we understand that one out of every three bites had something to do with the pollinator and the importance of pollinator habitat. I represent Minnesota Farm Bureau and the Governor's Pollinator Protection Task Force, and we're doing a lot of discussing with that group as far as what are the right types of pollinator habitat, the right places, and things like that. As a farmer, whether it's CRP or longer-term crop land, I have that opportunity, just as you heard from Paul Lemieux on our farms, to put pollinator habitat in a better place than on road ditches and things like that. And we would just urge that when we support this bill, and no matter what we do, whether it's at the state, the county, or the local level, communication has to be the key as we deal with those road authorities. And we would ask that you support this bill.
Mr. Papp, then, are you dealing with the county road authorities at that point out in the local areas? Is that who is basically the spokesperson for
MnDOT? I think communication is key, and whether it's, you know, there's not a permit required, it's not governed, but yet if there's things where it is sprayed for noxious weeds, farmers want to have that open communication with whomever the ditch road mowing ditch authority is to make sure that we've followed the label, that there's the appropriate withdrawal periods and things like that, or it's not used for feed for the livestock. So as we have communications on any issue as it deals with mowing for noxious weeds or for haying for livestock feed.
Okay, thank you. All right, so you've... Okay, we have some other testifiers then. Welcome to the committee, and please give us your name for the record.
Excuse me. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Ken Sewell. I'm with the Minnesota Association of Townships. And we'd like to thank the author for the DE1 amendment that for local governments restored status quo. Rewords the dates in a little clearer to read manner, in my opinion, but for the rest of the bill, it restores status quo for our authority over our right-of-ways. By and large, mowing in the right-of-way has not been a problem at the local level. In fact, it has, as you've heard by other testifiers, been a benefit. Occasionally, we'll get a call about what do we do with the hay bales that have been left or a stray hay bale that causes an artificial obstruction. Usually, that can be dealt with very quickly. We work well with our friends at Farm Bureau and Farm Union to put out reminders that, yeah, you're fine if you're in the right way, but don't leave the obstructions here because that does pose liability. So we're very grateful for status quo being restored at the local level. There are a couple of things we've talked to the author about that, in particular, Clause C at 1.20, 1.21, that perhaps we'll be able to find a little clearer way of addressing that situation because there has been a little confusion as to the exact scope, but not a problem at, that we're opposed to the bill in any way at this time, just something we'll keep working with them on. This does raise an issue that we've also talked with the author and many others about in terms of general weed control, as you've heard. That's a major, major issue for townships. We take that a very serious role. It's probably, in my lobbying career, the only mandate that our folks have actually said they want to keep. You don't often find a mandate, weed inspections, but that's something our folks have said, yes, it's important for us. We need to be able to do that. So we have, you know, keep working on some weed control issues with control mowing in the right of way. And also with the 12-inch requirement that's, that the cutting be left at 12 inches, which is current law, remains that in the author's bill. And that's fine for now, but as a practical matter, what we're hearing from all the contractors is it's just not feasible to have, usually it's going to be a lot lower than 12 inches. You're certainly not going to have uniformity. And so we don't want anybody being caught out of compliance with the law that simply cannot be complied with physically. So that's something that we'll work on, but not necessarily for the purpose of this bill, just an issue raised by this discussion. So with that, I'll stand for questions.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Sulem.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Emily Pugh with the Association of Minnesota Counties, and Mr. Sulem said it best, so I'm just going to kind of echo what he said. We, on behalf of AMC, we support the DE1 amendment and the fact that it restores status quo for local road authorities, and we just want to thank Representative Swedzinski for his work on this language and want to continue working with him going forward.
Thank you. Very good. Thanks for your testimony. Who else, then, is scheduled to testify? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Margaret Munson. I come here as an entomologist and a beekeeper. I live in St. Paul. And I've heard the words weeds used a lot here. And to the casual observer, a lot of our roadsides do look weedy, maybe some shrubs, maybe a few trees. But to thousands of different forms of wildlife, this is habitat that offers not only food, but shelter. And for our honeybees and for our native species, it's life-sustaining forage. Due to the declining populations of pollinators, there's more need to preserve as much natural habitat for as long in the season as possible. So mowing early eliminates many of the flowers that bloom late in the fall. And pollinators need resources all season long. And in addition, these plants can offer overwintering shelters. Many of our native species overwinter in those dried stems and stalks that remain at the end of the season. That's all they get through the winter, so they can survive the next year. You're going to hear soon about the colony losses for beekeepers and of the severe decreasing numbers of monarchs. There's only about 10% of the monarch population now that used to be 10, 15 years ago. And the sources for food for monarch larvae are only found in milkweed plant species. Milkweed eggs are laid in mid-July through to September. So if you mow that milkweed before the larvae have matured and the adults have emerged, you completely destroy those generations of monarchs. They are the ones that have to migrate all the way to Mexico and come back, lay eggs on the way back, and their progeny are the monarchs that show up in Minnesota and further north. There are different percentages I've heard on survival of monarchs, but it's only approximately 1 to 2% of the eggs laid, and an adult monarch can lay 400 eggs that actually survive that season here, going to Mexico, and then ending up starting the return back. There are many reasons for that. It can be predation. It can be pesticides, but a lot of it has to do with loss of their basic food, the milkweed species. In 2015, University of Minnesota Monarch Lab monitored roadsides in Minnesota, North Dakota, or South Dakota, Wisconsin, and Iowa, and found only 24% of those roadsides had monarchs in them, that had milkweed, had monarchs in them. So as serious as the health of our honeybees is to our food supply, monarchs are the only species with a unique and extensive migration, but there's something else that some of you may not be aware of. There are literally thousands of other kinds of insects that are pollinators. There are beetles that pollinate. There are flies that pollinate. And our native species of bumblebees and solitary bees are over 400 species. They're all important to the health of the wild places. And those native species make healthy forests, healthy grasslands, healthy wetlands, healthy prairie remnants. Honeybees don't do that part. The other thing is roadside habitat can become corridors critical to pollinators finding enough nutritional resources. And when they're connected, it allows more plant diversities to survive. If you have little small patches of plants that aren't well enough connected, the health of the gene pool shrinks. So the more you have, the more habitat and the more connected habitat, you have a greater diversity. With more diversity, you have stronger plants and stronger insect populations. So the more we can connect corridors that can be allowed to last for the growing season, the more important it is. Another additional benefit is that perennial roadside vegetation for the native species that are very deep-rooted, and most of those are, they help hold the soil, they help filter out pollutants, and in some cases provide living snow fences. The Minnesota Department of Natural Resources has a publication called Integrated Roadside Vegetation Management, used by MnRot in some places, and it includes statements not to blanket mow, but to mow only what's needed for safety and weed control. The MDA has a brochure entitled Pollinator Best Management Practices for Roadsides, says delay roadside mowing, discourage 100% mowing, except for safety and weed control. And the Monarch Joint Venture, which is a more recent project monitored or controlled at the University of Minnesota Monarch Lab, is recommending not to mow before October 1st in southern Minnesota and not before September 20th in northern Minnesota. We've got to find some ways to incorporate as much healthy and diverse roadside vegetation and management strategies that are going to bring back more robust roadside habitat that can sustain wild populations of birds, small mammals, and insect pollinators, because we really need them for the ecological integrity that makes our landscapes, our soil, our water healthy, and so for us. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And who is up next?
Hello, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for having me. My name's Erin Roop. I'm also a member of the Governor's Pollinator Committee. Kevin mentioned I'm not here as myself. I'm here to read a testimony from a few folks who couldn't be here. One of them is Dan Whitney, who's president of the Minnesota Honey Producers. In Minnesota, we have about 400 commercial beekeepers, so this is folks with way more hives than me. I have 16. Dan has, I think, 2,000. He's in Texas right now raising queens for his industry and then other beekeepers as well. Half of his hives are there in Texas with him and the other half are out pollinating almonds. So it's beekeepers' job to not see you here in this room. They're pollinating our food supply. And like Kevin mentioned, honeybees are directly responsible for a third of the food we eat, most of our fruits and our nuts and our vegetables. Okay, so here's Dan's statement. This is a statement from Dan Whitney, president of the Minnesota Honey Producers Association. In regards to the mowing, roadside mowing and baling bill being presented, I would like to point out that it is important to Minnesota's honeybee industry to maintain the August 1st deadline for the mowing and baling of hay in our state's roadside ditches. We have a major loss of honeybee forage in our state, and I wanted to shout out Paul and Kevin for the work that you're doing on your farms with that. That's incredible, and bees need it. Yeah, from 1996 to 2016, Minnesota has lost almost 50,000 colonies of bees. Honey yield has dropped from 40 pounds to 60 pounds per colony. Our state is losing about 6 million pounds of honey production per year at a loss of $11.3 million to Minnesota beekeepers. The financial picture looks bleaker when you factor in the loss of 50,000 colonies plus the existing colonies that are in too poor condition to generate a pollination income. That number would come in around $9 million. Minnesota's beekeepers rely on the 500,000 acres plus of roadside ditches as a small source of honey production and as a large source of nutrition and pollen for our bees. The bottoms of the ditches are great places for wildflowers that thrive in the wet and damp soil. This is important in the dog days of summer, when the dog days of summer are upon us and the surrounding landscape is getting brown and dry. Roadside ditches are also need to shoulder a larger habitat burden in the future. The health and well-being of honeybees and pollinators will be negatively affected again when the new agricultural wetland banking policy kicks into gear. Swapping out wet meadows and seasonally flooded farmland acres for acreage that is basically a standing pond or reservoir that only has reeds and cattails around the edges will be a poor substitute for the type of acreage lost that contains the same flowers that grow in our road ditches. Thank you for your consideration, Dan C. Whitney. And Dan's based in Ottertail County. And then the second letter I want to read is from the Xerxes Society, and they do a lot of work in Minnesota. We have 3 pollinator conservation experts here that are helping farmers to increase habitat on their farms. And this letter is from Jennifer Hopwood. Dear representatives, I am writing concerning House Bill File 124. I ask you consider the negative consequences this bill would unintentionally cause, specifically a significant reduction in habitat for game and songbirds, as well as pollinators, that is unnecessary for motorist safety. Firstly, roadside vegetation can provide valuable and important habitat to small wildlife, including game birds like quail and pheasants, as well as songbirds that make Minnesota their home. Roadside habitat is also important to pollinators such as managed honeybees and to wild pollinators like bumblebees and the increasingly imperiled monarch butterfly. Minnesota's roadsides play a crucial role in supporting monarch butterflies. Monarchs use Minnesota roadways as breeding habitat during the summer and rely on the fall wildflowers as sources of nectar during their annual migration, like Margaret mentioned. Beekeepers rely on floral resources found in roadsides to support their honeybees. Although it may seem counterintuitive to encourage habitat along roadsides because pollinators are at risk of vehicle collision, research shows that roadsides with more flowers and those that are mown less frequently have reduced butterfly mortality during vehicle collisions. Allowing adjacent landowners to conduct mowing and haying at any time during the growing season will destroy habitat for birds and pollinators and without any benefit to motorist safety, which is the primary goal of roadside vegetation maintenance. Increased mowing or haying does not reduce the likelihood of deer vehicle collisions. In fact, mowing more frequently may make roadside vegetation more palatable to deer because they prefer new vegetative growth. And then there are some citations. A roadside can be managed to provide a safe driving environment for motorists while also controlling erosion and reducing the spread of weeds. Those objectives can also be achieved while supporting pollinators and birds. And Alex, I think, do you have this to send to the committee? So I'll make sure you all get this in writing.
That would be great. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you all for your time.
Thank you. And Mr. Arnasti, welcome to the committee.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chairman, Chairwoman, and members of the committee. My name is Don Arnasti, and I represent the Isaac Walton League, which is an outdoor conservation organization here in Minnesota. I want to thank the author for trimming back the scope of your bill with the DE amendment. We appreciate that. Yet we still have concerns, and I just wanted to highlight a few for you. First of all, let me say that we are in no way defending the permit process that MnDOT put out this last fall, and do understand our friends' concern, agricultural producers' concerns about the both the suddenness and the content of that. And we, too, also had no idea that this was going to be coming, as was indicated by several other testifiers. So I do think that there is a communication problem as well as a content problem. We are hopeful that we can have a more thoughtful, many-party discussion about what the right management policy is for these publicly owned right-of-ways. What I would like to stress is what's under discussion here, affected by this bill is approximately 12,000 acres of publicly owned right-of-ways. And I agree with my rural friends that in many instances there have been agreements, just verbal agreements or verbal understandings of how they're managed, and they describe what they've been doing in the right-of-ways, as well as what they do on their own land in some instances to promote and protect pollinator habitat. But we do not think, the Isaac Walton League does not think it is appropriate for a publicly financed road system to put in law that there is no opportunity for the actual road authority to manage the right-of-way. And what we would like to discuss is the opportunity to use some of these habitat strips that these right-of-way represent across rural Minnesota to support another public interest and public value, which is pollinators. And the value, as was described by some of the agricultural testifiers, the value to our food system and to agriculture. And so we're hopeful. I mean, I think we understand the reaction to what MnDOT put out in November and are sympathetic to that as being perhaps inappropriate. But we hope that maybe there can be some further discussion down the road to refine this so that we can come to an agreement where we understand where there are opportunities to create pollinator habitat and other public value strips on these publicly owned right-of-ways, that perhaps this bill could evolve some more as it continues through the process. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, sir. And do I see Mr. Peterson? I'm going to draw up the close here. Welcome, Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chair. My name is Scott Peterson from the Minnesota Department of Transportation. And we do have some serious concerns with Representative Swacinski's bill. First, I'd like to just kind of address some of the comments I heard before I forget about them. In terms of the suddenness of the announcement of the permit, we announced it before Christmas for a mowing season that is at least 6 months away, giving people plenty of time to become aware of the permitting requirement and to contact MnDOT in order to secure a permit or to ask questions about how to go about it. As someone mentioned, we did reach out after we heard about some of the concerns from the ag community. We did reach out to them. We made a number of modifications to the permit in order to make it easier for people to obtain a permit. Our primary concern was for people to obtain a permit, not to make it a financial burden of any kind on anyone. So, and as it was said previously, the permitting requirement has been in existence for as long as anyone can remember. So it's not a new requirement, it's a revision of a requirement. And although we are being criticized for not having announced to the, for example, the Farmers Union that we are making changes in the permit, I would just like to note that they contacted the DNR but not the DOT to see if we are making any changes despite our efforts to work with them in the prior 2 years on the other bill. So just some people covered the background already of kind of how we got here, MnDOT, to this position. During the last two legislative sessions, we worked along with the DNR and the ag groups on revisions to the mowing statute that is being amended by Representative Swacinski. We acknowledge that there are issues with the current statute as it exists. Those issues have created a longstanding, basically, disregard for the mowing restrictions that exist in statute. I would also like to say that during that process, and we heard a lot of concern about the proposed changes, But also, we heard a lot of concern from some of the folks that you just heard from, the people who are concerned about the habitat for pollinators, small game, and birds. So, in addition, the governor has issued an executive order requiring MnDOT to manage its right-of-way to the benefit of pollinators. So, during the course of those conversations, the last couple years, we started to take a closer look at the permitting practices that were actually in place in districts. And what you heard is largely correct. There is a very few people out there getting permits to mow the ditches. MnDOT personnel were not actively going around to try to find people who are out mowing and tell them to stop. The statute as it exists doesn't provide MnDOT with enforcement ability, nor there are any penalties for violating the law in statute. So our folks kind of threw up their hands and surrendered to the practices that were going on there because of their inability to control it. And we found out that the practices for trying to ensure better compliance with the permitting requirements varied from district to district. So what we did was we decided to implement a revised permitting process that makes it easier for people to obtain permits. We established that permitting consistent permitting requirements statewide. What's in statute are directions to the Department of Transportation. We don't feel like we can choose which statute to comply with. So we thought it was in our interest and in the interest of the people of Minnesota in order to make a better effort to try to increase compliance with the law. And that's what we think our permit process has done. We have a fiduciary responsibility to the people of Minnesota who invested billions of dollars in our public highway system. We take that responsibility seriously. The ditches and the vegetation that is in the ditches is an integral part of that investment. We also have a responsibility to preserve that value over time, ensure safety of the travelers who use the roadways for which the property was acquired, and protect the state from liability for negligence or actions of others who are working in a right-of-way. As we focused on looking at revisions to our permit process, we started to get a lot of anecdotal evidence, and I'm sure that the people that we heard from here today are good operators and responsible, but that's not the case with everyone who accesses the vegetation in front highway ditches. We in fact, what we heard were issues with damaged culverts, knockdown signs, rutting, tearing up of newly planted seed beds and vegetation. I don't know how widespread that is. Just reporting on some of the anecdotal evidence we have. We haven't systematically tried to accumulate evidence on those practices, but I'm just saying that it exists. We also heard several instances of unsafe practices, like leaving bales on the inslope, that part of the ditch slope that's close to the paved way. Those create a significant barrier that if someone ran off the road and ran into one of those large round bales, it would have a very detrimental impact on the occupants of the vehicle and the vehicle itself. We also heard people parking their trucks, partially obstructing the travel lane so that they can load bales, and equipment operating to load the bales that without proper lighting to alert oncoming traffic. We've also heard about people fighting in the ditches over who has the access to the hay in that particular segment. And then we've also heard of people who have gone in and harvested hay that had recently been sprayed with a toxic herbicide and suffered the consequences. So these are all issues that we think can be addressed with a more comprehensive permitting requirement. One of the things that the permitting requirement does not address, but which is addressed to some extent in this bill, is the dates that are in statute, because, of course, that's not within our purview to address. But that is, overall, that is the biggest point of contention, I would assert. As I mentioned, back before Christmas, we issued a press release announcing the changes in the permitting requirement, and that created a lot of pushback. Some of the things that we did address in making changes to the permitting requirement is we extended the date by which adjacent landowners could exclusively apply for access to mow the ditch that adjoins their land. We also developed a process so they could assign those rights to somebody else if they wanted to basically have some specific individual have that opportunity. We reduced the requirement for liability insurance by simply making a statement that people who work in our ditches have to have insurance in order to protect the state from liability for, again, actions that may cause some damage or crashes on the trunk highway system. And we changed the deposit requirement to make it more flexible so that people who have a history of being responsible business people and working on our right-of-way can be relieved of the need to make a deposit. We also made some changes to some of the safety equipment that we required. We had originally required a high-visibility cab and vest because we know that those are important safety devices for people working along high-speed traffic. And we changed that to only requiring a high-visibility vest. And if it was a problem for people to obtain a vest, we have offered to give them to people for free. And we originally asked people to have a rotating amber beacon on their equipment when they were working in our roadside, and we changed that to simply have warning lights on their equipment, which I believe most farm equipment comes equipped with already. But my primary concern about this bill is that it basically takes property rights that the state has acquired by compensating landowners, either through an easement or through actually acquiring land in fee. And those property rights include the right to control vegetation in the for the benefit of the public. And what this bill does now is it basically conveys that property right for controlling vegetation back to adjacent landowners, if it's still the same landowner, but gives them the right to control property that is now basically the property of the state. And so, in my view, it's no different than someone going into a state park and digging up plants and selling them at their local landscape store, or going to a state forest and cutting wood for and selling it for firewood. This is vegetation removed from state-owned property to support a commercial enterprise. And I understand that there's a connection to the land, there's a connection to the ditch when we get into rural Minnesota. That may be a little bit different from that, but when you boil it down, that's essentially what we're talking about. Just as an example, we had an opportunity to talk to Representative Swedzinski yesterday, and the easements that were purchased for the highway that adjoins his land actually identify vegetation as one of the rights that purchased by the state. So we have the right to purchase or restrict that access and management of that vegetation, and make sure it's in accordance with state law and the practices of the Department of Transportation. And so that is really our primary concern with the bill. It's interesting that the DE amendment, as you heard, basically keeps the existing authority and rights of local road authorities to manage their roadside vegetation in place, but limits those of the Department of Transportation, which manages the state trunk highway system, which carries, although it's only 8.4% of the state's roadway mileage, it carries about 55% of the traffic. So they're the highest volume roads with traffic operating at the highest speeds. So I would argue that the risk there for safety is at its highest there. So I just want to review some of the primary reasons that we think a permit is important in order for the state to adequately manage its roadside, and those are safety and fiduciary responsibility. Some of the safety goes to the operator. When people come and get a permit, we offer them guidelines for operating safely near high-speed traffic. Some people have experience with that, but not everyone does. We want to make sure that people are operating safely. They're using large equipment in a relatively confined space alongside high-speed traffic, and we know from experience, we have people that work along roadsides, and we've had people killed and injured in the line of work in those environments, so we know it can be dangerous. We also, Representative Swedzinski makes exceptions for controlled access highways, but we also have concerns about allowing people unrestrained access to roadsides along expressways where, again, traffic speeds are higher. These are four-lane highways that have at-grade intersections, so they don't operate like a freeway, but they still have very high-speed traffic. I think average speeds typically are in excess of 70 miles an hour. And we want to make sure that no one drives this equipment onto travel lanes where there's other vehicular traffic and causing safety issues. We also want to identify obstacles that exist in the roadside. When people go in there to hay, often the vegetation is long. Some of the obstructions that exist in the roadside are partially or completely obstructed, and we want to make sure that they know that some are located there. And so we talk through that. And we also have signs which are more visible, but and then we also have other utilities. In virtually every trunk highway roadside, we have other utilities, whether it's electric, telephone, broadband, natural gas. We also want to make sure they're aware of some of the slope stabilization practices that are being employed in those areas, and drain tile and things of that nature that help the roadside perform its function. And we also, again, as I mentioned, we want to make sure that they are aware that certain kinds of equipment help increase their visibility and reduces their danger from being hit by vehicular traffic. Of course, the traffic and public safety is a huge concern of ours, and so we want to make sure that we consider what their experience might be when they're driving through areas where people are mowing. So we want to make sure there are no roadside operations during dusk or early in the morning before the light is adequate. And as I mentioned, flashing warning lights on equipment. We also spend a lot of money to remove obstructions from the roadside, so when equipment is not in use, we would like them to not park it in the roadside. And we also want to make sure that bales are removed in a timely way and that they are kept off the inslope. I mentioned fiduciary responsibility. So the ditches are an important part of maintaining the structural integrity of the roadway. That we spend a lot of money to build a base to the roadbed before we actually put the pavement on there, and ditches are designed to keep that water away from the roadbed and either maximize infiltration or drain it away from the roadbed as quickly as possible. And of course, we then want to make sure that the soil in the roadbed is undisturbed as much as possible, because the soil in ditches is actually engineered to certain mineral qualities and content, and so it's important that that maintains its integrity as well. And then, of course, we want to protect the investment in the roadside vegetation itself. We have very specific seed mixes that we use along the roadside that contains seeds for plants that are suited to roadsides. It's sometimes very expensive that we find, we identify salt-resistant species and plant those. And in some cases, we've started planting native plant areas and wildflower segments that, of course, we don't want to be mowed inadvertently in order to preserve them and ensure their vitality. I already mentioned stormwater runoff, but of course, culverts, drain tile, detention ponds, and other devices are in the roadsides, and we want to make sure they're not damaged. And if they are damaged, that the people who do the damage are responsible for fixing it, and not the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota. We want to protect our roadside infrastructure, as I mentioned, signs, guardrails, and posts, and prevent erosion is a big thing. As you all know, ditches have, many times, very steep slopes. If they're not well protected by vegetation or other types of devices, there's a considerable amount of erosion, and that erosion can undermine the structural integrity of the road itself. So then the other thing I would just mention is that we require a deposit and insurance to protect the state from the negligent actions of others who are working in our roadway. And we know from experience that without adequate protection, the state is exposed to liability, because the state is the deep pockets entity in any relationship of this nature. And if there is no other obvious person to whom to press a claim, it comes to the state of Minnesota and MnDOT, and we get involved in a number of those actions virtually every year. So I mentioned the locations of hazardous chemical applications, which the amendment does address to a certain extent, so I appreciate that. We are not quite sure how we would go about identifying all the areas in order and enforce the location, but again, I do think that that's an improvement. I think everyone in their packet has a map that looks like this. This is a map, and you look at the light green areas along trunk highways. These are areas that we've identified as areas of concern for roadside vegetation. So anytime anyone applies for a permit to mow or hay any of these roadsides, our folks who do our roadside vegetation management go to the map, look at the data that resulted in this identification to see if there's any reason why you should not allow a permit in these areas. Now, a lot of permits are likely to be permitted in this area. We from existing data, we know that they're, we know we can't automatically qualify them for hearing, so we want to make sure that we take the extra step to make sure that we're not inadvertently spreading noxious weeds or damaging a planting that the state has invested in.
Madam Chair?
Representative McDonald.
Thank you. See, I'm just looking at the watch, and I'm just concerned that with this gentleman's testimony, it's been it's quite lengthy and informative. However, I'm concerned that we will run out of time and not allow members of this committee to have questions to the author and or the witnesses. So I just wanted to make that aware and seek your counsel on this, Madam Chair.
Representative, we do have a handful of questions from members, but we'll let Mr. Peterson finish and appreciate his sharing all the concerns.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I will just finish up quickly. Again, our concern is that, you know, MnDOT used taxpayer funds to purchase this property on behalf of the state, and as a result, we have a responsibility to manage it for maximum benefit for the people of Minnesota. Some of the benefits that the legislature has identified that would accrue to the people of Minnesota more broadly, although not directly related to transportation, are still in the bill to manage it for habitat, for small game and wildlife. And so given the what would be largely unrestrained access to our ditches for people who want to put up hay, it would be very difficult for us to achieve those benefits on behalf of people in Minnesota.
All right, Mr. Peterson. I have a question. I heard a reference to 12,000 acres is what the right-of-way, if you added it up, would amount to. And is that an accurate number? Is it 12,000 acres total?
Madam Chair, we have one of our right-of-way experts in the room, and he informed me that it's about 250,000 acres.
Okay. All right. Thank you. So we have questions from Mason, Kosnick, Barr, McDonald, Carlson, Uwakim, and Hornstein. So I think we'll just get plenty of time, right?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Representative Mason.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have one question for Mr. Peterson and then several for the author. Can you give us some idea of what the costs are for applying for the permits?
Mr. Peterson?
Madam Chair, Representative Mason, there's no cost to apply for the permit. All the materials and the permit form are available online. There is a deposit required of some permit applicants. If we don't have experience with them or we have negative experience with them, we're likely to ask them for a cashier's check to hold on deposit until the work is completed, and if the work is completed satisfactorily, that's returned. If the work is done properly, there's no charge for the permit.
Because I thought somebody was saying
Representative
yes.
Mason?
Madam Chair, Mr. Peterson. So how much would you be asking, say, a first-time permit applicant?
Mr. Peterson?
Madam Chair, Representative Mason, so we've given the districts, our MnDOT districts have the discretion to change the permit fee, the permit deposit, in order to reflect the permit. So we've used $500 as kind of like a benchmark. If it's a relatively short segment, it might be less. If it's longer, it might be more. A lot of it is based upon our experience with the people who are applying for the permit.
Right. Thank you. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe a question to the author here or the previous testifier, Mrs. Roop, I think she said. To mention that there would be a negative effect from the new agricultural wetland banking policy when that kicks into gear, as she read the testimony of Mr. Whitney. Is that in reference to the governor's buffer wetland initiative?
Representative Swazinski.
Madam Chair, Representative Kosnick, I'm not sure what she was referencing to. So you'd have to ask that testifier.
Okay.
Thank you for your question.
Why don't you give us your name again?
My name's Erin Rupp. and that's Dan Whitney's comment, and so I'll follow up with him and get back to you on what his thoughts were on that. Yeah.
So we're not clear today if that's the initiative that he was referencing in his letter?
I would say we're not clear at this point. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
And I apologize for that. He's in Texas with his bees.
No.
Yeah.
I thought maybe as Madam Chair, as you were on the Governor's Pollinator Committee, that if you might know that. But appreciate that. And to the author, Representative Sawinski, I think you've done a good job of balancing some of the concerns with your amendments, and I look forward to supporting the bill. Thank you.
Representative Barr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I have a couple questions, and I'm going to direct them to Representative Sledzinski. You had several testifiers, and there was a gentleman with gray hair who I think is looking at me and smiling at me right now, and he mentioned that his family had been farming for longer than he was born, and I'm going to be conservative and say that maybe you're 40, and so for at least 40 years, some of these folks have been having these right-of-way mowing rights, or I don't know what to call them. Is that a correct statement?
Representative.
Chair Runbeck, Representative Barr, I would say, essentially, as long as you've been likely involved in animal agriculture and as likely as you've been an adjoining landowner, you've generally mowed those ditches. In my case, we mowed the grass before the roads were there, and I think we've been farming the property, which the state has bought easement to the center line, for I think 130 years.
Okay. Representative Barr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm not sure if this would be for you or Mr. Peterson. So you referenced a press release that went out, and I thought that was in 2016. And you had talked also about your fiduciary responsibility, and I'm just wondering, what was the driver for that release to suddenly come out? What was going on that caused the department to suddenly send out this release and want to do permitting and all this stuff?
Sounds like Mr. Peterson has the answer.
Madam Chair, I have an answer, Representative Barr. So as I mentioned, we've been involved with efforts to revise this section of statute that places these restrictions on mowing in ditches for a couple years, and as a result of that, we started to examine what was happening and whether we were actually meeting our responsibilities. We worked through the summer to come up with what we thought was a revised and streamlined process. And when we had concluded that process, we wanted to make sure people were aware that this revised process existed for those who wished to make an application for a permit. And we also know that during the winter, farmers tend to have more time maybe available to apply for a permit, and our permit folks also have more time to work on granting the permits because most of our permit work is done during the construction season.
Representative Barr, any follow-up?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. You also referenced anecdotally some things that you had learned along the way. Were you able to quantify that in any way? Because I know sometimes, when we hear anecdotally, it's just that anecdotally, and we don't hear from a broader audience. So I'm just curious if you were able to quantify any of that.
Mr. Peterson?
Madam Chair, Representative Barr, no, I was not, and that's why I made a point to reference it as anecdotal because, again, we don't have an ability to enforce the requirement to get a permit, so there's probably most of our ditches were paid without permits. We have no way of really knowing, and so there was no systematic process in place to capture that information. So I simply don't.
And I promise, Madam Chair, one last question.
Representative Barr.
On the map, you indicated that these light green areas are areas of concern. Why are they areas of concern?
Mr. Peterson.
Madam Chair, Representative Barr. So our roadside vegetation management folks acquired all the data that they could find that could be associated with a location in Minnesota about habitat. So whether it was like aerial photos or documentation of the existence of noxious weeds or other other means, I don't know all the data sources that they applied, but they were able to at least identify enough roadways, roadsides, to know that some were not of any concern, but some areas still needed some further investigation. So we're not probably as far along in the process of identifying where we should really have serious concerns as we hope to be in the near future as we do more investigation. I just point that out, is that this is not an effort on our part without some reason to try to get a better handle on what's happening in our roadsides. We do know that there are a number of noxious weeds out there. There are a lot of invasive species that require kind of unique approaches in order to manage them. And so we just want to be careful because we know it's not only in our interest, but it's also in the interest of the agricultural community that we do a good job of controlling these noxious weeds that are in our roadsides.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just quickly to Mr. Peterson, you listed a litany of safety issues. That was kind of the emphasis of your testimony as to why you're opposed to this, and it seems clear and evident that you're certainly opposed to this. I'm surprised anyone would even be allowed to get a permit with that attitude anyway. Do you have any evidence and numbers and cases that the farmers have knocked over signs, cars have gone in the ditch and hit a round bale, damage to the culverts? I mean, since it's such a big safety issue, you must have a clear document of cases that you can point to restrict this.
Mr. Peterson.
Madam Chair, Representative McDonald, I don't have a clear record. As I just mentioned, again, our permitting process was very uneven in the past, and we had no systematic way to capture that information. This is just reports from people who do the work on our roadsides, mentioning as this comes up that these things have occurred. And again, I didn't attempt to quantify them, because I don't have a way to quantify them. But yes, we are very concerned about safety. We, as I mentioned, we have our employees that get injured working on roadsides on an all too frequent basis. And even if I have no firsthand reports of people getting injured or killed mowing in our roadsides, we want to make sure that that remains the case.
Senator McDonald?
I'm sure. Well, I think it's very important that data be recorded, don't you think, for the safety? And if there's no evidence that the farmers are causing any unsafe conditions or accidents, then I think that your testimony doesn't hold much weight with me. This has been it's a very concern in my district. I have a rural area as well, and it seems to be working quite well in the past, and I just don't understand the complete opposition to it. I know that the pollinators is a big issue and important to the governor, but yet he vetoed a $2.2 million LCCMR line item that would help pollinators throughout the state. So I don't get what's going on and why there's a decision by the department not to allow farmers to mow the ditches. So I think that safety, if it is a true safety issue, like you say, then you should substantiate that with the evidence.
Not having heard a question there, I'll go on to Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do share Mr. Peterson's concerns with regards to MnDOT's safety and fiduciary responsibilities. With regards to the permit, I was able to kind of quickly bring it up just on my phone here. It looks like it's dated February 6, 2017, so it's the current permit. We heard earlier testimony in terms of some of the onerous aspects of this permit, and this is a question for Representative Swazinski. Can you speak to what is it with the application that was so onerous on the part of your constituents reaching out to you in terms of that permit?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Carlson. I think, you know, when speaking to constituents, currently there's a good process. And that's a process where if you're an adjoining landowner, you've generally managed that property for the last 50, 60 years. And the idea that you're going to get another permit, because this permit doesn't stand alone. As a farmer, as an agricultural specialist that we all are, this is one more straw upon the back of our ag industry. Whether you're in animal agriculture, you have discharge permits. You have different permits to spread manure, to fertilize your crops, to put tile in, to do a myriad of other activities upon your farm. And while this permit may not seem like a lot in itself, it is but one of many, of multitudes, of tens of dozens of permits that in any given year individual needs to seek out and get. And the idea that it's the wild, wild west out there where, you know, farmers are destroying the ditches are simply not the case. And, you know, I think the earlier permit probably got folks a little more dandered up when they talked about mandatory insurances and mandatory light bars and the rest. And I think that initially drove that. There are some improvements to this in permit. Mm-hmm. But I think the idea that it will be implied that in reality some of the constrictions will probably just not be. I mean, farmers are generally honest people. They're good folks that are following the way things have been done for the last 50 years. And you create a situation through a permit that may cause you to that you may feel questionable if it's even viable, August 31st being a date for mowing. People are going to use that as a feed source, and it doesn't make any sense. So I think that's probably the impetus and from the owner's side. Thank you.
Representative Carlson, follow-up?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I mean, as far as a bureaucratic permit can go, this one couldn't be simpler. It's literally one page, and it's not even the full page. It's name, address, telephone number, and ask for it to be accompanied with a sketch, not a survey, just a sketch of in terms of so allowing MnDOT the opportunity to know where this mowing is taking place. So, honestly, for this ability for commercial gain to mow this space, I don't think MnDOT's asking too much. We heard in previous testimony that there's no cost to this. I really see this as an excellent example of a public-private partnership. And in a partnership, both sides are in negotiation with each other, in partnership, in relationship with each other, for what can be perceived as a public good. I mean, MnDOT, would you agree, Representative Swazinski, that MnDOT has a certain responsibility for knowing who's operating on their property? And that's, I think, just to what this permit gets to, is just knowing who's operating on their land.
Representative Swazinski?
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, I think to a large extent, I think it's pretty obvious who's doing the work. You can open up a plat book and look.
All right. Representative Dubbin, did you have anything to follow up with? Otherwise, we'll go on to Representative Joaquim.
Madam Chair, please proceed. Go ahead.
All right. Thank you. Representative Joaquim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Going back to some earlier testimony, Mr. Sulem and Ms. Pugh mentioned from the counties and townships that because it's relating to just trunk highways, that allows them to manage their township roads and county roads, I'm assuming, in the way they see fit. Maybe if they could come down and very briefly explain how they're doing that, if they have their own permitting process, or just curious, I'm trying to kind of get the scope because you said you were happy with the DE1 because it excluded you. Just trying to understand.
Okay. Let's hear from Mr. Sulem again, please. Could you understand the question?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Madam Sulem with the Township Association. By and large, it's the only abutting landowner who's taking care of their own land. One of the main differences between our locals and the state is we have an easement right on the surface. We don't own the actual land. That's still the abutting landowner. So usually any mowing or hanging is being done by that abutting owner. To the extent that there is a concern or problem, there have been some that have put in a very informal permit, just more of an info, who do we call, what's the contact, if there is a problem. But by and large, it's the abutting landowner.
Anything to follow up, Representative?
Yes, thank you, Ms. Chair. So that's true for township roads. Could I ask if counties could come forward?
Madam Chair, Emily P. with the Association of Minnesota Counties. Representative, it's quite similar. It's a very informal process at the county level. Oftentimes, it's just the landowner that calls the road authority and says, we're going to be out there at a certain day, checks to make sure there isn't any maintenance or any construction projects going on at that certain time. And, you know, oftentimes we highlight a map where they're going to be, and then we just know that that portion will already be taken care of. So very informal.
Follow-up, Representative?
Madam Chair, again, question. Are you like the townships where you don't own the land that they're working on?
In some cases, yes, that's true. Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that's probably the kind of crux of the problem here, or the concern is that the liability issue, if somebody's injured on land that the MnDOT owns mowing this property, there is a huge liability issue. That's why in the permit there's a waiver process for it. So I can see their concern. I actually have a quick question for the author because I'm trying to understand the language on 2.5 and 2.6. It looks like you can allow the abutting landowner to notify the commissioner by writing or phone that they don't want mowing to occur on their abutting property, right? So how would...
Chair, that's a yes.
Representative.
For the record, so 1,000 years from now.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Stransky. How is MnDOT going to even facilitate that if they don't have a permitting process to then deny somebody a permit to mow on that adjacent land if the owner that is adjacent to it doesn't want somebody to mow there? Because this kind of opens it up for anybody to go and mow even if they're not adjacent to it.
Representative Swazinski?
Madam Chair, Representative Udakim.
Close.
I screwed my
last name.
I try. I know we got to work on that. You know, the reason why we put that in is because there was some thought on the fact. I mean, you can get signs to put up to say there are no mowing or ditching allowed. And I think, you know, the way the process has really worked for ever is that, you know, it's generally understood that, you know, the adjoining landowner generally is the one who manages that adjoining land. And I think that's what we're getting at with that piece, is that if someone so choose that they wanted to leave it up, that they could notify MnDOT that that section of land is not, otherwise it's not going to be.
So members, we are going to take a vote here before we adjourn today.
Real quick follow-up.
Representative Ewell-Kim.
So from what I understand, Madam Chair, Representative Swedinsky, this basically opens it up for fair game for anybody that wants to mow, no matter if they're adjacent or not. And you mentioned being able to put up signs. Would that be the adjacent landowner? Because you can't really put up signs on land that you don't own, which MnDOT owns this land. So I think that's some of my concern there. Sure. It's just like who owns the property, and the liability issue that Representative Carlson brought up is huge. One other quick question, and I may be way off because it's been a while since I've been a city council person. There is such a thing as reverse taking, and I think one of the qualifications is if you've maintained a property for over a dozen or 13 years, then you can claim it as your own. So I'm wondering, just far out there, if this would end up causing a reverse taking on state-owned land.
So, Representative, I mean, there's going to be a lot more discussion on the bill, and we appreciate all the issues that have been brought up. It's going to go on to at least two more committees, so I think we have run out of time for today.
I
so
can take that question
thanks.
Off if you want.
Yeah,
great.
I'd be glad to chat with you.
And there have been others that wish to testify as well, but or to ask questions, but you may have to catch up with the author.
Yep.
I'm going to renew my motion that House File 124, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Agriculture Policy. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay.
No.
The motion does prevail. The meeting is adjourned.